glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Ma Om Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Prasthaya Vichuvaya Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pachani Nivasesa Sumivani Paskachadi Satami. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yutara Padakamalam Sri Guru and Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatham Vitam Sam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Padijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha Panchakalpa Chivishcha Kripa Sindhavya Vitapatitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavam Mahama. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So it's August 10th, 2020, Hillsboro, North Carolina. And we've just been reading in the Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 19, about the story of Krishna swallowing the second forest fire. And I wrote a book on this story for children, and I put together a presentation, so I asked Guru Krishna Maharaj if I would be able to give that presentation today, which covers the whole Leela, instead of just reading a particular verse. And he very kindly agreed. And again, we want to thank Jagat Guru Prabhu for setting up this new system, so those of you on Mayapur TV can also see that presentation. All right. So according to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, this fire represents the obstacles that atheists create against Dharma and the preachers of Dharma. Yes, Maharaj has been talking about this a lot lately. Often he calls it stupid. That's actually kind, because it's not just stupid, it's demoniac. Yes, it's actually evil. So there is an increasing amount of evil in the world as Kali Yuga progresses. And this increasing amount of evil makes it very difficult for the preachers of real religion to function. And this is true for anyone who's a preacher of real religion, Sanatana Dharma. There's such a mood of simply anger and hatred, racism, speciesism, destruction of the planet, the idea that religion is only for foolish people, you know, primitive people, and these, you know, atheistic, scientific, so-called scientific philosophies. We've been working with Maharaj's disciple Arjuna in New Zealand with this anti-atheism propaganda. So it makes it very difficult, right? We were hearing the other day, Vaisheshika Prabhu was the girls that are dancing with my daughter were listening to one of his programs, and he was saying that if you try to distribute books, many times people will say, "We're not interested in religion." And he likes to quote a verse in the Bhagavatam that says, you know, this book throws out all materialistically motivated religion and preaches the highest truth, which is distinguished from illusion, from the welfare of all. But this is the mood. As soon as you say, well, this is something to do with religion, then people are immediately opposed. So this fire that's coming, it represents this pushback from Adharma, and especially from Kali Yuga and how Krishna destroys it. So this pastime happens on the same day as the killing of Pulambasura. This is in the summertime. And as we've heard, Pulambasura took Balaram to the Bandira tree, to this great banyan tree that's on the other side of the Yamuna. And all the boys and Krishna rushed to that spot, and they were very excited. They were so happy that Balaram had killed this demon that in their happiness, they became neglectful of their service. So Maharaj gave a wonderful class about how we should be responsible in our service. But sometimes it happens that we have so much to do that something gets put by the wayside, or sometimes the devotees become so filled with ecstasy that they lose their awareness of the world. Happens sometimes. Even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, sometimes he goes into these ecstatic trances. So sometimes it happens like that. And the cowherd boys were in such, not that we should use that as an excuse, you know, where I was in so much ecstasy, Prabhu, I didn't put oil in the car. It was all due to my ecstatic trance. So not like that. But that's what actually happened. They were so busy playing with Krishna, and so busy celebrating the killing of Pralambasura. Wow, Pralambasura is dead! That their cows, goats, and buffalo wandered off. And I found it interesting that the cows, goats, and buffalo were there. Because we always hear about Krishna's cows, right? We don't usually realize there's also goats and buffalo there. Now, also, the cows, goats, and buffalo wandered off. It said they were greedy for sense enjoyment. That they wandered off independently. Yes? Maybe we sometimes do that. Maybe sometimes we wander off independently for our own sense enjoyment. Right? As soon as our authority isn't looking. Right? As soon as our temple authority or our husband or our parents or our guru appears not to be looking, we're like, oh good, an opportunity for me to indulge in some sense gratification. So, of course, these are transcendental animals, but still they're animals. You understand? Like Prabhupada talks about Draupadi in the first canto. She's a pure devotee, but also she has a womanly mood, and therefore she was very kind to Asvatthama. So the animals also, they have an animal mood. It's part of their rasa. And so they need guidance. That's why they need cowherds. They need someone to guide them. And without that guidance, they're like, oh, the grass is greener over there. And so our acharyas say they suffered for this whimsy and independent-minded. And they walk 5 kroshas north. That's about 15 kilometers, about 7 miles. Keep that in mind, how far away this was. And they went to the Ichikatava, or the Mundaranda, or the Mandiyadi forest. It's called by 3 different names. By the way, these pictures were done by disciples of Tamal Krishna Maharaj in China, who are professional animators. And Krishna had this incredible arrangement that I got in touch with them. I actually went to their home in Wuxi, outside of Shanghai. And they don't speak a word of English, like not hello, like not what is your name, nothing. And I worked with them for 3 days, like 10 hours a day, to get the sketches done for 250 illustrations. And then we had to work with them over the internet. Without language, so that was very fascinating how this got done. Then they got caught in some sharp canes, and they were feeling very thirsty, right? And Krishna Priya was speaking about this. How can the devotee suffer from thirst? One of the whips. But in Krishna's human-like lila, it's above liberation. So it's above just bodily, physical thirst. And these experiences all become part of rasa. But there's also an instruction for us here that if we act independently or whimsically and go looking for satisfaction out of the care of our authorities, then we become entangled and we simply experience distress. We think, I'm going to satisfy my desires separately from Krishna and Guru. I'm going to satisfy my desires separate from the shelter of Krishna. And instead of being satisfied, they go, well, I'm going to find some nice grass. They simply got stuck and they were suffering. And this is exactly what happens to us. It's not only that our authorities need to be attentive to take care of us, but we also need to be attentive to stay under their shelter. You know, that's also on our part. You can't protect somebody who doesn't allow themselves to be protected. So we have to allow, you know, our parents or our husband or our guru or whoever is taking care of us, we have to allow them to take care of us. We have to allow them to give us instructions. We have to allow them to guide us, even when it may not be so pleasing for our senses, because otherwise we get stuck. So meanwhile, back at the banyan tree, the boys all of a sudden realize, oops, that ever happened to us? We're supposed to be responsible for something. We're supposed to take care of something. And we go, oops. aren't we having a meeting today at 10 o'clock? Oops. Weren't you supposed to come and cook the offering? Oops. You said you'd write that letter. Oops. Right? So the cowboys went, oops. And they felt remorse at having neglected their livelihood. Now, we can have a whole long discussion here about Varnashram and how the children were trained in a livelihood from a very young age. Now, if you say that today, people will go, child labor. But what I found is if you say to people that from a young age, children should be engaged in meaningful service. They shouldn't be engaged simply in just, you know, playing. They should be engaged in meaningful service. And children like to do meaningful service. In fact, they're always imitating the meaningful activities of adults. The only reason this went out of fashion was the Industrial Revolution, where all of a sudden, instead of children learning how to weave rugs or take care of animals, or they were in the factories. And so therefore they said, all right, compulsory education for everybody. Now why did they have this compulsory education for everybody? Well, one, the children's work in the factory was dangerous. So instead of doing something natural like taking care of the animals or helping in the fields or weaving rugs, they were getting their fingers cut off in the machines and they were out of the sunlight for 12 hours a day. But it wasn't mostly compassion. The main reason that compulsory education was instituted was that the children were taking the jobs away from the adults in the industrialized society. And you could pay the children, you know, 1/4 the amount you could pay an adult. And so it was to save the jobs of the adults that the children were then herded into schools. And I won't talk about this for too long. But then what was also happening is that the Industrial Revolution, people became crowded into cities. So instead of a one-room schoolhouse with 15 kids or 25 kids, all of a sudden you had 500 kids or 2,000 kids. And then the people who had developed the factories, they said, let's apply the principle of a factory to a school. These people were not educators. They were not psychologists. They were not sociologists. They did not come up with that system for the benefit of societies or families or the children. They said, let's separate the kids by grade according to age, and everyone has to do the same thing at the same time, and when they finish that, they progress to the next grade, and we're going to house them until they're 16. In a traditional school, all ages were taught together. There was a certain thing you were supposed to learn, and when you finished that thing, it didn't matter if you were 8 or 12 or 15, you graduated. And your education was practical. It wasn't a bunch of theoretical stuff that you never used. How much theoretical stuff that we've never used did we have to suffer through in school? What percentage of our schooling would you say was theoretical stuff that we've never, ever used?
At least 90 or 95%.
Something like that, yeah. Like, I really use the quadratic equation a lot. You know, 10 times a day, right? So there's, the education was very practical. If you look at the education that Krishna and Balaram received once they went to Mathura, wow, who wouldn't want to go to that school? You can learn to play musical instruments underwater.
Cool.
Isn't that cool? And make flower airplanes. Whenever anybody says, we have a traditional Gurukul, I said, oh really, where's the flower airplane? But the idea was that the children did get an education, but their education was practical. You know, now we're moving to this practical, hands-on, project-based education. Well, what's more hands-on, project-based than taking care of the animals? So the boys were contributing to the family's livelihood. And it wasn't just the school project where you do a project and you show your parents and they go, yeah, 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 and then they wonder how they can get rid of it without hurting your feelings. You know, it wasn't like that. But these were real things. And we see that when our children are engaged in meaningful service from a young age, they feel that they're part of the movement because they are part of the movement. So when we engage the children in decorating the temple for Janmashtami, when we engage the children in creating the entertainment for Janmashtami, and one of the great opulences of this temple, one of the things that made us come to this temple back in 1990, and one of the things that allowed us to stay in this temple through ups and downs and backwards and forwards, was that Krishna Swami, Krishna Priya, had this mood of welcoming the children and engaging them in meaningful, real service. I mean, you know, it was just such a breath of fresh air and something that should be emulated all over the society. So anyway, the kids were like, man, we really blew it. Where's our animals? Now, the Acharyas say that Krishna and Balaram didn't feel this way. Sridhar Swami says that Krishna and Balaram had arranged for the cows and goats and buffalo to wander off because they wanted to experience a new pastime. And Sanatana and Jiva Goswami says that all of them were acting out of great love for the cows. And this is another thing we could talk about for a long time. We don't need to motivate ourselves by guilt and fear. We could motivate ourselves by love. So it's not that the boys were being motivated by guilt and fear. They were being motivated by love. And being motivated by love is what distinguishes all these spiritual rasas, all these intense emotions, from our material emotions. So they couldn't find their animals. Now they had to cross the Yamuna. They had crossed the Yamuna to get there. And they searched by looking at the hoof prints and the eaten grass, the bent grass and the eaten grass. And as we mentioned the other day, this was unusual because generally the grass grows right back up. Then Krishna called the cows by name with a voice like a thundering cloud and with love. And Sanatana Goswami says this is Krishna's Sankirtan. You know how Mahaprabhu was saying the names of the gopis and then he got in trouble and so he took sannyas? When Krishna does Sankirtan, he says the names of his cows and goats and buffaloes. So I don't know about any of you, but I'm like, you know, maybe I could be qualified to be a buffalo. You know, anything like that. I'm not really qualified to do Krishna's pastimes. I'd never come up to the level of a cow. But, you know, even if I'm just a goat, Krishna's going to call me by name. And Krishna knows each of our names. Knows each of our names. Billions and billions and billions and billions of living entities. You know, Prabhupada talks about in Krishna book how Krishna has japa beads. You know that Krishna has japa beads? What are they made out of? Jewels. And what does Krishna chant on his japa beads?
Cows.
The names of the cows. Imagine that. Krishna's chanting the names of the cows on his japa beads. And he's calling the names. Now he's just a little boy here, but still he has this great voice. And the cows respond with great joy. Right? Maharaj was saying this by moon. And the goats go, bah. What do the buffaloes say? But they're saying with great joy, they're responding. And that's our business. Krishna, actually Prabhupada says 24 hours a day, Krishna's giving us an opportunity. He's always calling. Urmila, Urmila, hello. You're lost in the forest fire. You're lost in the canes. But it's our responsibility to respond. Krishna gets out his japa beads and he's calling us by name. What are we supposed to do?
Come.
Get out our japa beads and respond. Krishna's having his sankirtan where he's calling us by name. What are we supposed to do? Get in the sankirtan and respond. Krishna, Hare Krishna. Hare Rama, Krishna, Krishna, Rama, Rama. We're supposed to respond. It's a relationship. Krishna and Balaram and all the cows were so happy. And the boys were so happy. Like, oh, we found our animals. And we found them all in one place. You know, you just imagine the animals could have all wandered off everywhere. They could have been having to find them one at a time. We found them all in one place. Like Srila Prabhupada came to America and found a whole bunch of us. Found them all. And they were so happy, and they start walking back. Yay, we found our animals. We're walking back. Oops. Does this happen to us too? Right? Yay, everything's done. Everything's going great. Everything's wonderful with my service. All my problems have been solved. Oops. Got all this taken care of for Janmashtami, and this, okay, now I can just sit down and just read Bhagavatam. Excuse me, we have a problem. And so the fire comes from behind them. And they feel the heat of the fire. Remember, this is the summer season, and the way it works in India, it basically just rains once a year. So this is right at the end of the summer. It's the driest time. So this is when you're most likely to get fires. So they start feeling the heat from the fire. And then the fire surrounds them in eight directions with the wind carrying it like a chariot driver. The flames were like meteors. Which reminded me of Kalki. Dumaketaviva kimapi karama. Jayadeva Goswami says, Kalki comes like a comet. But in this case it was... the fire, the demon fire. And Sanatana Goswami says the fire is a demon friend of Kamsa, or the fire wanted to associate with Krishna. And the boys prayed like one afraid of death, as if they were afraid of death. Now this shows they weren't afraid of death, they were afraid of separation from Krishna. And again, they had love for the animals. They were dependent on Krishna. Krishna will save us and Balaram will help. So first they ask Krishna and Balaram together, then they just ask Krishna because they have special affection for Krishna. Now they're remembering Gargamuni's words that Krishna will help us. We have no shelter other than Krishna. This is a repeating theme in the Bhagavatam, right? We don't have a shelter other than Krishna. Our intelligence, our creativity, our parents, our husband, our wife, our children, our grandchildren, our friends, our leaders in this world, they're not ultimately our shelter. Only Krishna can save us. And even Krishna's intimate friends, they're not thinking Krishna's going to save me because he's God and he's all powerful. They're like, Krishna's going to save us because he's so wonderful and he loves us. So Krishna tells the boys, close your eyes. Now often Krishna says this to us too. Just trust.
There's a fire.
Just trust.
There's a fire.
Just trust. Yesterday we were telling the Janmashtami story, and now Krishna tells the demigods, I'm coming through the heart of Lord Brahma, I'm coming. And it took 49 years before he killed Kamsa. You know, Vasudeva and Devaki, they have this benediction that their eighth child will kill Kamsa, and there they are in prison for 8 years, with their children being killed one after another. Just trust. So close your eyes. Is that a normal thing to tell somebody in a fire? Right? So I've been in a couple of kitchen fires. I was in Gita Nagra, used to cook 10 chapatis at a time, and I had three big flames going. And the kitchen was so hot, I didn't actually feel the heat of the fire. This part of my sari caught fire. I didn't feel the heat because the kitchen was already so hot. All of a sudden, I noticed there was this huge 3-foot flame behind me. So I didn't close my eyes. I'm like, oh yeah, stop, drop, roll. Right? So stop, drop, roll. And there was a big pot. It was Monday morning. Midday. There was a big pot of apple chutney left from the Sunday feast that they were going to serve out for the Monday lunch. And there was a big pot of whey because we had made paneer. So the devotee saw I was on fire, and one of them threw the pot of apple chutney on me. One threw the pot of whey on me. But I definitely didn't close my eyes. Nobody said, close your eyes. Thankfully, I didn't get injured. So as Krishnapriya was saying yesterday, that the boys, when Krishna said this, they thought, oh, he knows some mantras. He has some herbs, some jewels he's going to use, and he doesn't want us to see them because if we see them, they'll lose their efficacy. So they thought, all right, we'll cooperate. So they close their eyes, then Krishna swallows the fire. So why does he do this? So our acharyas say he does this to show Brahma and others his love for his friends. Also because he was thirsty for it. Vishnu says nothing happens without his desire. He was thirsty for fire. Like he's thirsty for fire? A lot of times people are thirsty for fire. I don't like cayenne and red peppers at all. It's not good for my particular Northern European body. But I know a lot of people who really are thirsty for fire. You know, if there's no chilies in something, they're like, this isn't even food.
No taste.
No taste. They said no taste.
No taste.
And I'm like, what? You know, there's other flavors besides. Anyway. But so Krishna was thirsty for fire. Now, the acharyas also say that the devotees can't bear to think of Krishna swallowing the fire. And that's one reason that Krishna told the boys to close their eyes, because he thought, if the boys see me swallowing this fire, they're going to get all upset, and they're going to run and try to stop me. So I have to do this, you know, privately. And so also sometimes it's said that Yogamaya turned the fire into a cooling drink. Or sometimes it says the fire was afraid of Krishna, so the fire became a cooling drink because all of a sudden it got scared. The boys were almost unconscious. When they opened their eyes, they were back in Vandirama. So some acharyas say they opened their eyes on their own initiative. Others say the Krishna says, okay, open your eyes. Do you remember how far away?
7 months.
7 months. So they open their eyes, poof. This reminds me of the demigods' prayers to Devaki in the womb, where they say the whole ocean of material suffering, as soon as you approach the boat of Krishna's feet, it becomes very small. They thought, Krishna must be a demigod. If he's a demigod, then we're demigods too. Whoa! And they were very happy. Now, we haven't read these verses yet in the Bhagavatam, but Krishna started playing his flute in a special way and entered back into the village. And he comes back to the village to remove the great separation of the gopis. And then the boys told Nanda, Yasoda, etc., how they were saved from the fire and how Pralambu was killed, and everybody increased in their affection, and then the rainy season begins. I'm going to skip these. This is part of another presentation, so I'm going to skip that. Let's hope this works. Is this going to work?
Krishna,
You like that? So thank you very much. We have a little time for questions, comments. And thank you again, Jennifer Kruger, for setting this up even before the mount was here. Really, really appreciate it. And thank you, Marsh, for letting me show this instead of a regular barbecue class. Yes?
A couple of things. The first one is that how the illustrations are so beautiful. The pictures are so dainty and so beautiful.
Yeah, the artists are very wonderful, wonderful devotees, very inspired people.
So this is a very, very pleasing to see this here and then here. Thank you for putting it together. Very nice.
We feel, you know, privileged that we could, as I say, this is from a children's book. It's part of our Learn to Read series. So it's something that we really feel happy that we can give to the devotee children, that they can have these stories to meditate on with these illustrations.
The second thing is that, you know, the first fire, or any kind of demon, it seems to me like because Krishna is so good and so loving, everything appears to be one way, but there's so many layers of understanding.
Yes,
many. And these personalities are not just in the past, but in the fact that they are coming in direct contact with the Supreme Lord, like the first part is being consumed.
Wow.
Can you imagine being taken into the body of Krishna that way? So I was thinking about how we hear these stories, but we have to go beyond the understanding that there is all these evil personalities there. They're actually pure devotees to the Supreme Lord at some level. That they're coming in contact with the Supreme Lord. And that the Supreme Lord interacts by touching, by caressing, by drinking them in so many ways. And I'm just wondering, because I haven't read the commentaries of the acharyas on these last verses, so I'm not sure exactly what they're saying, but the principle is that everything is absolutely gorgeous. And all these activities go beyond these points of fighting these terrible demons that represent these horrible demons.
So those of you on the internet who couldn't hear Rudrani, she was talking about how that this fire also must be some kind of a great devotee that goes into Krishna's body, that he's drinking the fire, and that these pastimes are happening on so many levels. That's what's said about Agasura, how the yogis meditate for so long to see Krishna within. But with Agasura, Krishna actually entered. He actually went into his... And therefore, Agasura ended up becoming liberated. And at first, he merges into Krishna's body, but then he's going to Vaikuntha in an airplane, and Lord Brahma sees him. Lord Brahma and the demigods see Agasura going to Vaikuntha in the Vaikuntha airplane. They're like, what? And that was why Lord Brahma came and was watching and stole the boys and cows. But yeah, for Krishna to drink you, you know, because all the food that Krishna is eating, it's not, I remember Mother Akshana asking me about this one. You know, how does Krishna eat? And how do people eat in the spiritual world? You know, we think about like digestion and etc. The whole digestive process. But it's just some sort of a loving exchange that's going on. So yes, these pastimes are happening on an infinite number of levels. And the relationship between Krishna and the personality who's this form of the fire, you know, even if it is initially a demon, like the acharyas say that it may have become a cooling drink. That maybe Krishna wanted to drink fire, so maybe even the hot fire was satisfying his desire for, you know, super spicy food. And maybe the fire became a cooling drink also. It transformed itself. And of course the fire is also nourishing these pastimes. So yeah, there's so, and these levels never end. It's not that you come to a point, you get, oh, I get that. I got it, you know, now let's read another book. Yes. Thank you.
What about from the perspective that the forest fire represents atheism? And then Krishna drinks it in. Is there some commentary on that?
I never thought about that. Thank you. So Rajananda brought up the point that what about the fact that the fire represents atheism and adharma and Krishna drinks it in? So Srila Prabhupada, one time on an airplane, the captain of the airplane came and sat next to him and was asking him, you know, if there's God, what is evil? And Prabhupada said, evil is Krishna's backside. And that's actually in the Bhagavatam, that your religion is on his back. So, you know, a dharma does, it's not really a thing in a sense. It's taking something and using it wrongly. It is not, you know, we don't accept that there's like some separate Satan who's like a competitor god. It's evil is just twisted good. It's misused good. Lust is love that's been turned in some way. You know, it's like, should I say this? Are you going to kill me? Instead of using an axe to cut a tree for firewood, if we start cutting the door, you know, instead of using the cartels to play music, if I hit you over the head, that's why I don't travel with cartels, because I just have hand luggage. I don't know if I'll ever travel again, but anyway, I just have hand luggage, and I'm always worried that the guys at security will say I could use the cartels as a weapon, so I don't bring them. So for Krishna, there's no evil. It doesn't. It's meaningless to him. Like Prabhupada says, the electrician can, you know, produce heat and cold, but to the electrician, it's all electricity. So for Krishna, a dharma is his backside, and yes, it's not.
It's like very frightening for everyone else. It's like, oh, nice, it's all. And the Krishna's like, yeah, no problem.
Yeah, yeah. Isn't that nice? Krishna's just like, no problem. Actually, in this book that Kamalasita and I have written, that BBT Africa hopefully is going to publish by the end of this year, we're talking about the universal form. And, you know, even like things like envy and death, like they're part of the anus of the universal form. You know, so Krishna swallows them and he excretes them. But, you know, when in this world, the things that are excreted, they fertilize the soil and turn back into life. Prabhupada says the scientists aren't even good at destroying things. So even Krishna's destruction is auspicious. Thank you for that wonderful comment.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
I was thinking that actually saving is the process of just placing blame.
Huh?
Placing blame. You place it on some character. That's the problem. So we need ourselves.
Yes, that the whole problem is just displacing blame.
Yeah,
yes.
Find somebody to put it on.
Yeah, I'm guilty of that all the time. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.